So, sure, whether it's us or it's Tetragosis, and I want to really work out with you what constitutes a halakhic argument in terms of the history of halakha. I'm going to try and present what I think is a fairly compelling case as to how a certain halakhot develops. Mention perhaps why I think it would be better if halakha developed now in a particular way, but then talk about what kind of arguments are convincing in a halakhic context, what constitutes a genuine halakhic argument. So we start with the Shuvah of Moshe. Okay, the Shuvah of Moshe should certainly bias you in terms of the topic of the Shir, is the Asur Tetragosis, because Moshe's title is about that which is Asur Tetragosis. Right? Is that a phrase of that? Generally, that would be pretty dispositive. Right? But it's certainly Zarev and Agiyah of the Gosis. So Moshe says, it's a fascinating Shuvah. He says, L'yamtzi mani gesisa, in terms of what the signs are of being a Gosis, Shemati Sheharotim ein makirin behem. I hear that doctors don't know what this means. Maybe it's because for doctors there's no difference. Because in the non-Jewish world there is no concern that touching a ghost face is going to be murder. They think there's no prohibition for two reasons. One, because they don't know that it's asur to touch a ghost face, even though it says that in Maseches Machos and the Rambam and the Shach, right? But astonishingly enough, the non-Jews are unaware of the Shach. And secondly, if you know this, they're not concerned about this kind of murder. Fascinating line. Right? I mean, they're not concerned about this kind of murder. Rashi Moshe understands that there is an intuitive argument that killing a ghost face isn't quite the same as killing anybody else. So that's why in the secular world they've lost track of ghosts. Okay, so we should be, saying, "Oi, mass murder is going on in hospitals. People are touching ghosts." But he says, "Well, shomer Torah yesh lehem lishomer, kishi yodin shlo shayech l'raposos." Here, Moshe puts in first standard everybody. He says, "Look, it's also to touch your ghost face, but only if you have no therapeutic, put the right intent. So with therapeutic intent, even if you have simanei gesisa, you should still be able to touch them." Now that's an interesting definition of a ghost face, as somebody whom one could still conceivably have therapeutic intent towards. Right, but he says, but nonetheless, Shomrei Torah should be careful not to touch a ghost face when they know that there's no hope of healing him. They're no untrue ghost face. Shetrichon lizar miligabo. Okay, or alternatively, you can read them together and say that when you realize that there's no hope of refuah, which is stage A, and then B, you see that he's ghost face, then you'd be careful not to touch him. He says, "Anshei chevre kedisha shayu b'chol ir v'ir, anashim ma'oskim l'itzvazu, l'atzos kol dvar m'tzorach l'kod ameis, b'shat yisi nevzha l'achak furek m'nei g'shol shor v'tari v'ki." How you begin with it? But the chevre kedisha used to know this. The chim edumane, so it seems to me, "Sherofim harotzim leida, kishin insayim b'vate cholam shematzoy sham, gam eilu shemesim sham, yicholam l'hakir ze, kishin ishtadu liyot eitzu l'cholam kishin otim amlus." It seems to Moshe that if doctors really wanted to know this, they could hang around hospitals with dying patients and they'll be able to figure it out. Now, I don't know. What the simanei gesisa are?
Meaning that at a certain point, if it would touch them, the people would die, that them should be towards what they're murdering somewhere?
They'll be able to recognize the time when people are ghost safe, which Ramela has enough gemina that if you touch them, they'll die. So you can heal, right? So they'll recognize, there's a state beyond that. Now, the empirical evidence we have most recently is that there seems to be a cat that's very good at this. So it's very famous in AOL for a while that there was a cat, I think named Oscar, that was the inevitable harbinger of death, and this terminal ward, they knew that if a cat came and cuddled up with you, you were dead the next day. Which is this massive cause to live, and everyone tried to figure out if the cat had some kind of supernatural sense. But I am unaware of any human being right now. And Ramosha tells you, he thinks the Anshei Chevre Kedisha used to know about this. He doesn't say they know about it now. He doesn't say, right, otherwise he would just tell the film doctors, go to the Chevre Kedisha. Right? But he says, I think that if the doctors hung around the hospital, they'd be able to figure this out. Now, has he hung around the hospital and figured this out? Apparently not either. So a ghost face is this peculiar thing. It's us for to touch a ghost face, but no one right now knows what a ghost face is. And what really gets me is Ramosha doesn't seem so concerned. Because doctors who hang around hospitals are going to be doing this. And he says, look, the Rav famously, allegedly said about, knowing which shoes to tie first in the morning. Right? If you know about it, then you have to keep it. Right? So if you know what a ghost face is, you should be careful not to touch him. But I would think that for a medical student, the first thing to learn is, look, this is a ghost face. Don't touch him or you're a murderer. No mention of that. That's the point that always strikes me as a puzzling shiver of Moshe to talk about an Isser Ritzicha in somewhat cavalier terms. Now, that's so if there is an Isser Goses for Moshe, it seems to be a very, very limited one because no one knows what a Goses is, and he doesn't impose, astonishingly enough, he doesn't impose a chiyuv to find out what a Goses is, which I would have felt was really important. Okay, now what actually is the halacha about touching a Goses? So stage one is we take a look at the riff. Right? The usual way we look at this, according to the Akdama of the Shulchan Aruch, is we look at the riff, the Ram, and the Rush. And we see what they say. So the riff says the following. Tanya Bavel Rabbati, a Goses Arayu Kichay V'chol Davar, Ein Kosher in L'chayav, Ein Poking Yidav Nekavav, Ein Manifin Klei Matachos, Ein Klei Maker Al Tiburu Vat Shosh Yomus, Right, possibly like main sachin also, the medichin also, the metilin also, a whole lot, the whole gabi melech atchiyamos. Okay, you can't treat him. All these things that are useful in preventing the corpse from petrifying, one cannot do to a live gosis. Okay, whether the reason is that it's going to kill him, or the reason is the lack of kavod, we can be agnostic about right now. Then he says, you can't close his eyes. There are many, many different texts about whether it's amsin with an aleph or amsin with an ayin or right, what the order of the mem and the aleph and the tzadeh, whatever it seems to mean, closing the eyes somehow, whatever the word is. Anybody who touches him is a murderer. So this is similar to a candle that is flickering, sputtering. If a person touches it, the candle goes out immediately. Okay, couldn't be clearer. Touch a ghost face, and he dies. I think it's a new thing. Right? You can't touch him. Just can't touch him. Raise the shofar thummim, right? Like a candle. Touch the candle. Ah, very good question. Why do you know the earlier ones? I don't know. Let's look at the Rambam. Same list. Anogeba, raise the shofar thummim. Now the Rambam goes, okay, the Rambam puts in this line about closing the eyes afterwards. You should be careful lest you, lest maybe you just fainted. You shouldn't close the eyes. Right? But that's a, how you could close the eyes without touching him, as the Fryan points out earlier, is a little bit problematic. Okay. Seems like a reasonable imperative to me, a conclusion to me that if you touch him, that you're killing him, that you shouldn't touch him, no? Aha. Okay, it's figuratively in the sense that it doesn't create an imperative, right? Because it says, Koha Maldim Techer Rabbim, Kilo Shotef Tamav, that means that you can be Maldim Techer Rabbim. Okay, I would say that maybe the language Shofet Damim is right. Is I don't know that you can derive anything other than that you shouldn't do it. Okay, you want to claim it's not a formal Isser? Okay, good. Okay, let's take a look at the Rush. Mysteriously, the Rush says exactly the same thing. Okay, so at this token, we know exactly what to expect from Shulchan Aruch, because we know he always takes 2 out of 3. And here we have 3 out of 3. But of course, you look at the Shulchan Aruch, and what does he say? Hagos is a regular chayel of cold verb. Vein ma'amitin ena of adshateti nafsho. Sorry. V'chol ma'amitin mitzias nefesh, hareze shofich tamen. Same list, the rest of the text is identical. But he leaves out on Ogebo.
You're saying point the Rambam is after he dies?
According to the Rambam, you have to be careful to close his eyes. According to the Rambam, Amet means that you should, even at the moment where you think he's dead, you shouldn't touch him because maybe he's not dead yet. You shouldn't close the eyes. Right. You shouldn't close the eyes. Maybe he's just weakened. The Rambam moves closing the eyes afterwards instead of right after. Right. He repeats Shofet Damim, and he moves the Ma'amitzei Nav line to after the metaphor instead of before. Right. I think that's probably right. The reason he does that is because he thinks it's redundant otherwise. But what gets me is that you look at the Shulchan Aruch, and by the way, you know, like the Torah also, and you look at the, you know, the Beis Yosef just quotes the Rambam, and then you get to the Shulchan Aruch, and right, as in the Torah, and the Isser Negiah, which is in the Rift, the Rambam, and the Rush, is utterly absent from the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur has it too. Look at the Piskei Rush. Oh, interesting. Take a look. I don't know. But what I tell you is that every, from where I can tell, every Rishon except for the Ritzkeus has the Isser Negiah. That's my survey. The Ritzkeus is the only one I can find who doesn't have it. So what does this mean? Why does it happen? So if you take a look at the next page, you'll discover that apparently there are two versions of the Breita and Avil Rabasi that generate this sugya. In the first one, I don't know which edition is which. I just know that both exist. It seems they're both in Higur, I think. So there's the first one says, goes to the whole list, including Ein Mazizinoto. You can't move him. And then it says, Ein Ma'amsinatayev, you can't close his eyes. And Ogeyabo Umazizo Harezo Shotestam. Somebody touches him and moves him. Is a murderer. Fascinating language. So here it seems that closing the eyes is an example of touching him so as to move him. Okay, right, it connects the two. But if you look at the second version, so there it adds in a new halacha, and shomtin is a karmi tachto, which wasn't in any of the previous lists. And it says, "V'ein ma'amtin v'ein alash tetei nafsho." The Chol Ma'amet in Yisias Neshama raises Shosef Tamim. We have a Baita which tells us that Ma'amet in Yisias Nefesh raises Shosef Tamim, and there's no mention of an Isser Negiah Bichlal at all. So it seems to me that there are two versions of the Baita, and the Shulchan Aruch copied directly from his text of El Rabati, instead of copying the text in the Rishonim. Yeah, well, I was saying there are two. First one. The Shulchan Aruch had the second one, right? The Rift, the Ram, and the Rush all had the first one, but now we have the Shulchan Aruch proskening that there's no Isser Negiah, so far as I can tell. I say, now what do I do? Right? I have, and I'll tell you, it's not just the Rift, the Ram, and the Rush. So far as I can tell, every Rishon except for the Ritzkeus, at least in our printed editions. Right? I haven't done the manuscript work to see if, you know, if all our printed editions are corrupted, but. No evidence of it. On the other hand, the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch both leave out the Isser Negiah. I don't think so. Now, if you take a look at the next page, then now we could have fun speculating about which text is original. So we discover that there's an Mishnah in Shabbos.
Unity has different. Text of
Leo Lati,
still skipping over
from
him. You must know that.
Like, we'll talk about it. Okay, we'll talk about it. Right, let's just play the data out right now. Right, I don't know. That's part of. I'm trying to set up. You know, here's the data, and then I'm asking you guys, what would you see as a halachic argument? You can try it that way. Let's try it this way first. Because there's going to be another Nafkamina down the line. Because what always matters, of course, is trying to figure out who had what girsa when you try and understand them. Okay, and it might be that that a whole line of halacha, which is Paskin-like, is based on the assumption that that person had girsa B. But when we discover they had girsa A, then we totally and radically re-understand everything about them. This is Rav Nachman Rabinovich's famous argument about Lishneiver, that everybody has misunderstood the Rambam and most other Rishonim for years about Lishneiver because they assume that they had a particular girsa, which if you look at the Gemara, if you look at the manuscripts, it seems probably none of them had. Okay, so you look at the Mishnah in Shabbos, you discover that there's a Mishnah which says that you can, on Shabbos, you can do all these things. Okay, in this Mishnah, really the cool thing is to hold the Mishnah and the text and the Brisos of Rabasi right next to each other. And you discover this Mishnah about things you can do on Shabbos is, right, looking very suspiciously like the second Brisa. It has Shomtin Nezekar Mitachton and Shomtin Nezekar Mitachton. Okay. Uvachli Azizu Believer. Right, that's like the first. Okay, that's actually right. It's not in Azizu Notori, right? That one's like the first. Okay. And then we end up in the Atzmin, it's a Mace to Shabbos, the Lobbeth Holy Mitzias Nefesh. Vinam Ames, the Mitzias Nefesh, Horeze Shofis Tamas. The Gemara quotes a Brisa about that, which comes from the reverse, right, which is the reverse, which is apparently an early a version of the Brisa in Avil Rabasi, right, which says that those are the things you can do on Shabbos, right, and you can't, you can do them on Shabbos if somebody's already dead, you can't do any of them for ghosts. It ends by, right, and it quotes a Brisa which says, Tanu Rabbanan, An Atzmoi Mitzias Nefesh, Horeze Shofich Tamim, Mashal Oner Shekavav Holechet, Adam Meniach Atzpo Alev Miad Kavsa. Okay, so based on the Gemara, right, the version, what I'm calling version B of the Brisa Novel Rabbanan, which is the version eventually quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, it's clear that the metaphor is about Na'ame Zainav and not about Nogeva. And if we look back at the Mishnah, we discover that there is a prohibition against moving a mace on Shabbos. And it seems to me, right? It's all speculation as to what happened. One question is, why is it usher? Why would anybody want to close the eyes of the mace? Exactly, very good, right? So why is it important? What? Ancient tradition, what? Yeah, why do people close the eyes? Why do people close the eyes? Close the eyes of the dead? Pardon? So one possibility is the person's already dead. It's not, one possibility is that this is a minhag, which is a kod ha-mace issue. And the second possibility is that it's a minhag, which is in fact deliberately designed to be the person, right, who actually puts somebody into debt. And those are the two possible origins for a folk custom like this. Right, now, a sort of compromise custom about this, which will become important, is that there is a Sefer Hasidim, which will become very important to us later on, which says that you're not allowed to scream when somebody dies, because we're afraid that the neshama will return. So it might be that you close the eyes because we're afraid, because actually, the moment the person is dead, you want to keep them dead. Right, that's what I suspect is probably shot. But
the idea being that neshama exits through the eyes.
Neshama exits through the eyes are the windows of the soul, right? Not just the visual windows, but the egress. And yeah, and you close the eyes to make sure.
That's literally the thing you're really saying.
Yes.
How are we sure that neshama has already exited?
That's a very good question. You have to, watch them when I can see them, presumably. Right, and then you can know that. So, you can understand how, if you have some people who believe, who believe this, right, that's really what you're trying to do. One of these two things, either that you're really trying to help them die, right, that it's actually the mitzvah at the moment of death to close the eyes and help them, right, and
how would it help them die?
I don't know. Because it closes the eyes, and right, that's a right.
Because it's not about trapping the soul inside the eye. It's a different mechanism. It's like a totally different perception of
how it's. So outside the eye, right? Trying to troll outside the eye, not inside the eye. I don't understand it, but I think that it's a reasonable thing. But on the other hand, you might look at me and say, "I don't understand this," right? If you say, "I understand this," you'd say, "Why is it necessary to close the eyes?" Well, closing the eyes is about the lightest touch you can put on somebody. So right, so they're going to assume that it has to be an extra touching, because and right, and that closing the eyes is just an example of that, and that's how the other gifts are developed. I looked it up. I don't remember offhand how they. I think it will be ambiguous in terms of that. I don't remember. I don't remember the details. Good question. Good question. I don't have that snicker information. I tried looking online. I have some great quotes from Roland Barthes, but Oh, that's about it. Okay, so superficially, what we have is, I think, Tugir Sos and the Cephalus Tanos, which are not usually of probative halachic value anyway. One of those Girsos matches what we have in the Gemara. Usually we take the halachically of saying, okay, the Girsa that matches the Gemara is the accurate Girsa. Now, I gave you actually a sort of unfair presentation of the Rishonim. Because actually, well, the Rishonim, the Rif and the Rush at least, and most other Rishonim, they have one comment in Shabbos and one comment in Moed Katan. Right? They quote the Brayta of Rav Asi and Moed Katan. In Shabbos, they quote the metaphor relating directly to Yimotzei Na'im, the way it is in the Gemara. And in Moed Katan, they quote the version of the Brayta of Rav Asi that has the Yisra Negiyah. So they are associated themselves on the meaning of the metaphor. Then, as I said, the Shulchan Aruch comes back and quotes only the version that we have in Shabbos. So, the question is, first of all, an interesting question, what happens if the Beis Yosef paskins against all the Rishonim? The Shulchan Aruch paskins against all the Rishonim, what's the value? Alternatively, you can ask the intellectual question, which is, obviously the Shulchan Aruch didn't paskin against all the Rishonim, therefore he must have understood all the Rishonim differently. Or we can say, therefore, we must be misunderstanding the Shulchan Aruch, even though he left out that line, really thinks it's obvious to him that it's obvious to him that there's an Yisra Negiyah. Those are the three options. I think that the last one is really implausible, the great Yisra that he doesn't mention. Another way of reading the Rishon I'm open to. Of course, the fourth possibility is that he just didn't notice it. That's also a very peculiar thing. Now, one way of testing this is to ask yourself, what happens if you put a finger on a flickering candle? Does it go out?
No, not a candle.
It may not be flickering right, so you have to know there's anybody you can see sun in there. If they're right there, if you touch it anywhere on the candle, it'll just go out. No, I don't think so. I think you're right. That's why, you know, notice, right, you know, the right, you have one gear still which says, right, one gear still which quotes the metaphor, the one in Gemara Shabbos, which says, Ala meniach etzpo aleha. Right, I think you have other, and right, whereas you look at the version A, it says Kevin Shinaga Bawadam, yeah, this Kaveu, right? So the metaphor moves too. Right, from putting your finger on the candle, right, which is closing the eyes, right, to touching it. So I think, you know, if you ask me as a scholar, I think that what happened is that the original version was that there was no Yisra Negiyah, but the purpose of the minhag became opaque. And a later understanding of it was that the only explanation, that the only reason closing the eyes could only be an example of touching, closing the eyes as a minhag per se doesn't make any sense. Although, again, I don't think, you know, that it's mentioned so explicitly, so repeatedly in such different contexts, I don't think that's plausible historically. There must have been a special minhag about closing the eyes. And I don't know what it means that the Rav Yosef Karach quotes the other version. I could... You know, if I were really a sheevish, I could just claim that this is obviously evidence that the Beis Yosef had different Girsos, so those were shown. We don't have his manuscripts, right? He had manuscripts, he didn't have printed editions, so I can't tell you anything about it. We don't have any of his manuscripts, so I can't prove it. Maybe in all his editions, the Rishonim left out that line. Again, I haven't done the manuscript work in the Rishonim to see if any right, to see if I can find manuscript versions of each of these Rishonim. It's pretty darn astonishing that every printed edition of every Rishon except for the Rizkeyev has it.
You've seen the four options that you
outlined, yeah.
So those are all kind of
options. No. As far as I know, this isn't discussed in the Achronim, really.
No one knows this.
You don't notice Rav Moshe mentioning it? So we notice that now, so, you know, so the first question is, do we care about the metaphor? To me, it's clear which one the metaphor is. That the notion of a flickering candle and you touch, there's no such thing. Flickering candles don't go out any more than we know of any kind. Ask a doctor if they have any medical condition which, because somebody touched somebody, causes them to die. There's a reason we don't know Simani Gesisa, because we define Simani, if we define Gosis as somebody whom touching kills, there may not be such a thing. Right? People know when people are about to die, that's fine. Right, but if you define the ghost as a condition which you touch, how are you going to test that empirically anyway? Right, because somebody did it last time.
Yeah.
Right, that's the only empirical way to do it. Right, I remember the three last times you saw somebody's condition, Johnny touched him and what's guy doing such again. You should have known from the previous guy. But I don't know how you create a method about this. Okay, so I want to just... Now, there are pastoral implications here, which are, you know, at least some of us are socialized to think of, you know, really cool, classic deathbed scenes. Everybody sits around holding the hand of the dying person, right? That's very comforting to them. But now, apparently, you know, it's going to, you know, now we know that doesn't always work. Sometimes, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, the husband and wife, and, you know, and she's Tamea. So we can't always have these wonderful, comforting scenes. But it's a strange image. Just that, you know, you hold a scene and say, oops, you're about to die. That's a strange scene. Yes, no.
What Pokemon core for Lost is in the first place?
The core for what?
For Lost, it's the whole notion.
This mission. That's what we need. That's a, you know, that's really, I mean, there are other contexts in Ezekiel, you know, things like that where it's shown up. I don't think there's any Makor and Chumash for what a ghost face is. It seems to be a well-known condition. That's what, you know, strikes me is, you know, that in, you know, that in the same way that I find compelling the argument of the Tchelet people, that you can't take the Medrash about once every 70 years of a Chilazon literally, because we know perfectly well that there were factories set up to manufacture Tchelet. And if the Chilazon only showed up once every 70 years, there weren't going to be factories set up to manufacture Tchelet next to, right? It's just not plausible economically. So obviously, that has to be taken either as an exaggeration or as a later historical, right, a misunderstanding. But same token, at one point, I think that this Mana Gemara is clear that a ghost face was a clear thing. And I, you know, I just don't see any way there could be a clear tradition about somebody going to be dying by touching, and I don't recall anything like that historically either. Okay, that's issue number one. And I say it has interesting, Rav Moshe manages to evade the consequences of all this, basically, by saying, A, that that the risk of killing a ghost is overridden always by the chance of therapy, by the chance of healing him. Now that's, you know, that's a pretty big fiddish, because we're talking about Chayolam versus Chayeshah. It's not such a pashut thing. He should have to defend that. He doesn't. Right? He just assumes Devar Pashut that it's Moshe to touch him for the sake of Refuah. And secondly, by not encouraging anybody very strongly to find out what a ghost is. Right, so meanwhile, no one knows what it is, and as long as you're engaged in that initial things, you can find out. He doesn't tell Krovim that they have a fear to find out what this is. He only talks about doctors. I don't think Rav Moshe is terribly bothered by this. That's all I can read. Okay, now, second situation I want to talk about in the context of ghosts is introduced by the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer says that in terms of talking about when you can withdraw care, he says, Iker achiloku bein kishebifulato mesir rak hagorem hachitzoni einenu mevilo chiyut atzmi. Okay, the major chiluk between permissible and impermissible withdrawal of care is when your action removes only the external cause that does not bring him independent life. V'ashastur mishum kach bichlal la'asim davar kazeh kidei la'akev yetiyas nishmaso. And it is forbidden to extend someone's life by providing them with external life. Shemichi agav namutar lasiro, and because it's forbidden, you can remove the source of external life. Afilu kishav simasa, even if you're doing formally doing an action, you are pulling the plug, you're pulling the tube out of the person. As long as this is seen as providing them with external life, this is mutar. And the other version is levein sheyeshlo adayin chius atzmi kolsho. When they have independent life, the efshar v'ashir b'pulato gorei masiyas masa shall krevat yetiyas haneshama she'aser v'zeh shekosif haramah b'shulchan aruch. Okay, so the Tzitz Eliezer claims that there are two categories. There are people who are independently alive, and there are people who are sort of zombies. Right, they have a life infiltrated into them, which isn't really a life that belongs to them. So you're forbidden to extend the second kind of life, but it's usher to remove the first kind of life. And the determination about what is mutter is not a determination about the type of action you're engaged in; it's a determination about what kind of life you're dealing with. Okay, let me introduce the issue this way. Yes, a friend. Etymologically unclear word. You can look it up in the Aruch and Jastra and all those places. Pardon? There are a bunch of hypotheses. I don't find any of them compelling. Okay, I agree. I just don't find it uncompelling. Okay, so here's the basic problem. Intuitively, particularly as long as people have a recognition that there are some cases where withdrawal of care is appropriate. Because otherwise we have people living meaningless, expensive lives for 40 or 30 or 50 years. It is right, and there's the social cost of society of extending every life maximally is immense. Right, the numbers you get in various some hospital surveys basically tell you that many hospital deaths, perhaps the majority of hospital deaths, could have been delayed by 5 minutes if the doctors had done something more. But there's a point at which it doesn't make sense for the doctors to do that. So if you take the premise that every life has to be extended maximally, then we're irrelevant to contemporary medicine. Right, that's, you know, maybe we have to be, but we're irrelevant to the lives of some doctors because they're not doing that. It means you locked up the machine for another 5 minutes. It means you kept an entire ICU team on this patient and not that patient. Right? It may not be right. And maybe that you have to 5 minutes now. Then there's another thing you can do for 3 minutes after that. Many deaths in hospitals end because at some point the hospital decides this is not worth it. Now, hospitals' criteria are often scary. I talked about this time. I was a case I was told about of somebody who chose not to have who family chose not to revive them after an operation because he would have been physically enfeebled and he was an athlete and it was very important to him and his family decided he wouldn't have wanted to live that way. So they did not allow. There was a second operation that could have saved his life, and they refused to allow that operation because he wouldn't want to live that way even if it worked. That guy was very, very scary.
Did they have that option?
The family had the option of giving them power of attorney. Very, very scary to me. On the other hand, if you walk in and and the doctors tell me what they see as horror stories of rabbis who said everything, and so all the resources of the hospital were tied up to preserve somebody with no quality of life whatsoever, for days. We were just trying to keep what they saw as a shell of the body. The Sicilianer is this true, this powerful and scary image to me, effects of that. Somebody who's basically lost their telemelikim because all they are is a machine with tubes coming out of them. I was very disliked that rhetoric. But if we don't have something meaningful that talks about distinction between cases, we're not talking to the lived experience of doctors. That's, I think, maybe we have to be countercultural. We have to figure out what halacha says on that issue. I think that from the narrative, you can see that the Gemara doesn't assume that life is always a boon, but that life is not always a boon, that sometimes it's mutter to pray for somebody's death, for example, at least according to Ran, doesn't mean that it's mutter to kill them. So usually what you want to go for, all right, here's the thing. People usually want to go for a combination of two things. They want to find the patient who is no longer a mitzvah, whose life is no longer a mitzvah to extend, but they don't want to say it's okay to walk up and shoot them. Now, why should that be? If the patient should be dead, then shoot the patient. But somehow people are very uncomfortable about that. So they want to say, hey, there's a means and a patient together, and you can use this means to right. Now, the problem is that doesn't work logically at all, because if the means work, then the means should be mutter for every patient. Right? What's the difference? Right? All you're going to do is move something from Shrichas Damim to V'chaivahem. Right? But it's going to be, right? But it's still going to be, either there's a Chiyav HaTzalah or there isn't a Chiyav HaTzalah. There's no Chiyav, right? So you can try and argue that there's some things which are, there's some patients who there's a Chiyav Shrichas Damim for, but no Chiyav HaTzalah. That's a radical Chiddush. But even then, so you should write some, you don't have to have a new fancy halachic mechanisms, just use the standard halachic mechanisms are for distinguishing between masa and lack of masa. Nobody, to my mind, almost all of the solutions that have been worked out fail halachically. So they fail halachically in the service of a very good cause, that they think the result has to be. Now, even the Tzitz Eliezer here, all right, I ask you, according to the Tzitz Eliezer, I have a patient in history. The condition he's talking about is a patient who is severely brain damaged, but not brain dead, but who has had no heartbeat, but had the heartbeat restored artificially, and is on a ventilator. Now I ask you, according to this answer, can I walk up to this patient and shoot them in the head? tell you, it's not clear. It's not clear at all. You know, he says, it's mutar reif. When you have something which is ma'akir yitzias nishmaso, you can remove that thing, even by asiyas masa. Now, can you remove the life, or can you remove the thing? Now, that's not, if you ask me what pshat nesit Eliezer was, I would say probably it means you can remove the thing. Alright, that's what he's talking about. But it doesn't make any sense to me. Right, because what you're removing is not the thing, right? Once you're doing a masa, what you're removing is the life. And I can remove the life one way or the other. Right? If this patient has no natural life, then I shoot him, so I ended his life. His artificial life. Now, I have argued this sort of bloodthirstily in a particular context in suggesting that perhaps there is a way to be matir, transplants, even if you believe, as I tend to, that the arguments for brain death are not compelling. That maybe there are certain patients whom, according to Sicily, there you're allowed to shoot. So if you're allowed to shoot them, you can remove their hearts too. But it's hard for me to claim that Sicily really says that. On the other hand, logically, I don't see anything in his argument which prevents that. What's the difference between removing an external life by pulling a plug, or removing the effect of that plug by shooting somebody?
Isn't there an intuitive difference between letting something work, go along a natural course, and causing something unnatural to happen, even if the result is the same? You achieve the result by natural means and unnatural means, so it would require more strength.
Well, there are no natural means here.
Natural means is removing something which is lacking. It's about to go downhill, and I just have to release the floodgates.
Yeah.
The floodgates is very different than bringing 100 tons of water around to some other place and flooding the valley.
But am I releasing the floodgates here? The patient is alive. He doesn't say Maestro Monea. He doesn't say Maestro Monea here. Yeah. Agora, but the Gorma Chitsoni here, right, what is the Gorma Chitsoni doing? It's keeping him alive. How do you tell the difference between something? Right, what is the difference between, why is the ventilator in patient X giving him external life? And the same, right?
Why remove the heart versus remove the ventilator?
In one case, you're superimposing the claw on the light, whereas in the other case, you're simply removing it from the source.
Superimposing? What does that mean?
Meaning that there is, let's just speak of semantics. The patient is a maze.
Right.
Superimposed upon that is a shame.
Right.
There's something around it.
Good, and now I'm killing them.
Either stamp another maze on top of their eye, or you can take away the eye and restore the original status of mace. And intuitively, it makes a lot more sense.
Why am I standing a mace on top of their eye? They have a eye.
I'm not using the...
Good, but why?
But I think that essentially captures what the difference is. In one case, I'm restoring the original status of his natural inability to live. And I'm restoring that status by taking away something which is outside of him, which is giving him unnaturally that ability. Whereas in the second case, I'm not simply restoring his natural ability or his natural inability to live, but rather I'm taking something which, for all intents and purposes, is living, albeit unnaturally, and then killing it again. Not restoring.
Is it a bad thing? Do I have a chiyuv to save life? Is this a life that is worth preserving or not?
And that's not the question. The question is this a mice that is appropriate to perform or not?
If I'm claiming that I can kill a person, that when I kill the person the second time, it's a new chalos misa, right? Because they're dead in a different way, and conceivably I could kill the same person many, many times. Right, because I could reduce them. I could get rid of one organ and then restore it. Right, then I shoot another organ and I pull that one. Right, and so I could. Interesting questions around whether I'm chayef misa each time I kill a person. Right, it's a new halachic trivia question. Right, how can one be chayef seven misas for killing the same person? I understand that's what he's trying to say. I understand why one wants to say that intuitively. It doesn't compel me. Halachically, it doesn't compel me.
Halachically, being divorced from intuition.
Yeah, I understand why the intuition, why this intuition has a certain appeal to it, and I think that in a philosophic level, you know, Baruch Brody has a wonderful piece about pluralism, epistemological pluralism, I think, for morals, you know, that there's things that are wrong because of the etymosis, and there are things that are wrong because of the consequences, and there are things that are wrong because of the effect on you, and deciding whether any particular action is wrong is a function of each of those, and it doesn't have to make coherent sense. It depends on how strong each factor is. But as halakhists, we're not so comfortable usually saying things like that. Okay, maybe we should be. What I want to talk about is how the Tzitz Eliezer happens. Okay, because Tzitz Eliezer says very boldly, and by the way, this is what the Ramah says in the Shulchan Aruch. So let's find out what the Ramah actually said in the Shulchan Aruch and how the Ramah got there. So the whole discussion, if you read the Gemara, you would have no hint that it's ever much going to do anything to cause a Goseth to die in any way whatsoever. All the Gemara talks about are things that it's usher to do to a Goseth because they might kill him. The Sefer Hasidim, though, says, Ein gormin l'adam shlo yomos mehera. Okay, I can see Dr. Lee, I'm sure, is having connections. You can't cause a person not to die rapidly. Fascinating double negative. Kigon shei echad goseth, v'hai echad karev osa bayis chotei leitzim, v'yam eshama yechol alatzeit, nesir mechotei pishon. This is famous. You can remove the wood chopper, that is however wood choppers keep people alive. Now you can't put salt on his tongue to keep him from dying. Okay, so right, those are the two. You can remove the wood chopper. You have to remove the wood chopper. You're not allowed to put salt in his tongue. But if Ngozi Zomer any yachol lamos that she move him makam acher, I'll use his zivu misham. But you can't move him from place to place to help him die. Now, Afal Pish Omer Shomer Adam Ghost is Amy Zizan Vasom Kamo, Imyesh Leika Amy Nichan Sodabayas Matsina. Okay, halakhically, this is a jumble. Okay, you can remove the wood chopper, and you don't have to put salt in him, so obviously there's no Chiyah Hatzala, but you can't move him from place to place. Alright, maybe that's just because that's killing him, and there's no Chiyah Hatzala, but there is an Yisr Shvichas Tamim, but you have to save him from the fire. Oops, Chiyah Hatzala again. Now you can bridge this by saying maybe the reason you have to save him from the fire is not to save his life, but to save him from the pain of burning. Right? And then you can have a pretty straightforward claim that what's going on here is there's no Chiyah Hatzala, but there is an Yisr Shvichas Tamim.
The difference between saving him from something the stira is between saving him from a fire. Saving him from natural death.
Right? Well, the first theory is that it's usher to kill him, but it's no chiyuv to save his life. Where do we have such a context where
it's not necessarily mutter to kill him?
No, it's usher to kill him. But it's also usher to do anything to save his life.
That's taking it to an additional level of abstraction, right? It is we don't put in the semen, whatever that means. We don't put it.
I'll give you a simple case. There's a patient lying there, right? They're dying. You have a penicillin tab. And we say, okay, you can put the penicillin tab in his mouth. No, don't do that. That'll keep him alive. Of course not. It's a chiyuv hatzala.
Well, will it restore him to life, or will it prolong his death?
Where did that come from? Is he alive or dead?
Well, there's a difference between a ghost season and a non-ghost season. It's not a ghost season. It would be different.
So is the ghost alive or dead?
The ghost is maybe somebody who is going to die within a certain span of time.
So what? But you kill him, it's Ritzicha.
So you're not killing him.
But you're not killing him. If you kill him, it's Ritzicha. What's the difference between putting the poison on his tongue or not put right? That the difference is Ritzicha Tamim versus
salt, right? What sphere are we dealing with? Is it a sphere between
first level is where do we have a case of somebody whom we say that I can save his life? No, you're not allowed to save his life. I can't kill him. Normally, the answer to kill and the fear to save apply to the same people.
And then where do we see that there's such a person in the Sefer Hasidim?
The Sefer Hasidim says that the same person, you're not allowed to put salt on his tongue to keep him alive, but you're also not allowed to move him to help him die.
I think that the Sefer should be dealt with in terms of the particular cases, not just in terms of generalizing from there.
Okay, so we have ways of doing it, right? You can have ways of claiming that maybe these are supernatural cures, and we don't know how salt works, but you know, maybe there are cures external. You know, that's people try that. I think I think we would have to acknowledge, first of all, we have to acknowledge this is the first case in halachic history which anybody suggested that there was ever a withdrawal of care notion in halachic context, right? There's no hint of this in the Gemara. The first appearance of it is in Sefer Chassidim. No Bryce, no nothing. That's just, right? And so, whatever sense you make of it, you have to understand this is an original contribution. Now, yeah, those are both original things. The Yisr to move is a quote, right? Is a quote from the Brita. That's why it says Afal Pisha Amru. Adam goes as Ein Azizim Osol Mimakomo. Right? Afal Pisha Amru means he's quoting a Brita. Right? And the first halacha in Gosu Amen Yechul Amos is just adding color. It says Al Yizizu Misham. Right? He says even if he tells you I want to die, you can't do that. And no one had a halacha otherwise. Right? The finish of the Sefer Chassidim is he has two cases in which you're supposed to let the person die. Right, he's the first person ever.
If,
yes,
if you move the pin, how are you going to not move
it? If you move the what?
Pin. How are you going to not move them? If you put salt if you put on salt, if you remove the pit, the chotev, how do you not move the mace?
You know, the chotev is a guy shopping wood outside. You're just saying the chotev
is in, okay, fine.
Chotev is somewhere else, and you're just not putting the salt on. That's all he says.
Psychologically, they found that people can't delay their own deaths for important reasons.
Yeah.
People will wait to die until close family comes. And he's talking that people will also wait to die until that horrible noise outside.
Well, that's entirely fine. I have no need to disagree with the reality of this one. Okay. Now, the Sefer Chassidim himself actually doesn't play a role in halacha. The Sefer Chassidim is introduced into halacha by the Shulchan Aruch.
Does that mean it's a halacha?
No Baal Halacha before the Shulchan Gibarim quoted the Sefer Chassidim. And no Baal Halacha after the Shulchan Gibarim until like the 19th century quotes the Sefer Chassidim.
You're saying it's still going to refer to halachic practice. It's just on the halachic literature.
In the halachic literature, the Sefer Chassidim is known through the Shulchan Gibarim on this issue. And here's how the Shulchan Gibarim quotes it. Wild story. He says, the Mikane Nira Lesor, Mashinagu Ksasa Nashim, he quotes the Bryce and Abu Rabasi. And he says, from here it seems reasonable to, after what a bunch of people did, kishameis goseis ve'en neshama yechola latzeis. Okay, right? So far it's exactly the same case. Sheshomtin hakar mitachtav kidei sheyomus mehera. People remove the pillow from underneath him so that he'll die rapidly. Now this, of course, is an explicit contradiction to version A. Right, to version B of the Braita, which says Ein Shomtin Hasakar Mitachtav, and you can decide for the chicken or the egg. Sheomrim, now they have a new message. So the reason they do this is Ki Yesh Bemita Notzos Shel Ofos Shegorm LeNefesh Lo Tetzei. They claim that there are feathers that prevent that cause the soul not to leave. So they think that by removing the pillow from underneath the goseis, they are helping the goseis to die.
Is that clear? I also thought that
there are in the bed, right, which means in the car.
When you're removing the bed, you're removing the car.
Yeah, I think that's what I think it's...
If I get it, then they're actually trying to prolong his life by putting him closer to the car, which is underneath the bed.
Well, you see, he objects to this practice desperately because he thinks it's murder. It's not plausible to reason. Yeah, it's not plausible going on. I really don't think so. The Kama Palin Sati Kikruchi Lahasir Aminagara, the Lo Olabiyadi, right? I cried like a rooster, right, to prevent this, and nobody listened to me. For both I Cholko Alai, my rabbi and my teachers have disagreed with me. The Rav Reb Nosson Ish Igrazal Kasavo Zelahatir. Okay, so this is his position, is that this is all Asir. And Pashut, you know, it's hard to remove the pillow underneath him without moving the mace. So it's a fairly big challenge to figure, right? Even if you don't have that text in the Braisa, this sounds like it should be absolutely against the Braisa. And nonetheless, he's going to have time. If you think that a person is so delicate, right, if you touch them, they're going to die. But you can just pull the pillow underneath them, bop, bang. Okay, it's tough. It's tough to imagine that somebody who dies if they're touched is going to survive having a pillow jerked out from underneath them.
It depends why touching them is going to cause them to die.
Because it's like a candle.
Okay.
So the candle is a supernatural context. The candle feels your finger, and then right, it's something special about fingers. If you touch the candle with a broomstick, it would.
How well the metaphor is meant to be taken, I could have argued that a certain sensation, the sensation of.
Touch.
Skin or whatever it is, that's going to be, of course, not necessarily the roughness or the sensation at all.
Okay.
Is it also to set up a fan to blow cold air on him, or just run the heater in the room? Because that also achieves a slightly
closer. Interesting question. Yeah, I don't think any of these are necessary. That's my point. I don't think this is plausible. But okay, Lashita. But I'm arguing, I don't think any of these are true. Okay, Kamashanim, he says, Matsati Batefer Chasidim and Simon Tafshim and Gimel, see you at Varai, Shakata Sham, then he goes, 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 then right? He should just quote, he should just go to Rabasi. Maybe he doesn't have that kirsa. Possible. Also possible that his point is that this chiddush that people have, that sometimes you should do things to help them, the ghosts die rapidly. The Sefer Chassidim says, no, even a ghost says, right? Even through indirection, you can't do things to help them die rapidly. Now, the irony is he's quoting Sefer Chassidim as his raya against this, when Sefer Chassidim is the one who first introduced the idea that it was a good idea to begin with. Which he notices. He says, Emes, ki divrei Sefer Chassidim tzarachin and kibit chila kasa, shimari isha echad goses, reyachad korv osa bayis chod evetiv enesham yachotiv, mechir nechotiv mishan, demash mehefer, demash gazev acharkach. Okay, so he says, look, we've got a problem, but the Sefer Chassidim, on the other hand, seems to say the opposite. Ela sheyesh latari tzachi v'lomar. Okay, here's where he introduces the distinction. Devadai, lasos dover sheyugram shalo yomus mehera goses asur. Okay, it's certainly usher to do things that will cause the goses not to die rapidly. Kigon lachtov etzim sham kedeshin tis akif and asham milatzes. O lasu melech alashono kedesh lo yamus mehera. Kol de usher kedemashram sham milashono. Okay, so far we're just quoting Sefer Chassidim. Now he introduces a new thing. It says, V'chol kayotzi b'zeh shari lahasir hagrama shahu. And only is it, not only is it us, is it mutter, or is it usher to put the salt on, it's mutter to remove the salt. In the same way it's mutter to remove the chotev etzim. So that eliminates the option of psychological causes as opposed to physiological causes. It removes the option of negia as opposed to not negia. Right? You can't, you're allowed to remove the salt. Now so far we're fine, but then it gets really weird. The Hilchah Aser Nami Lasum Afechos Beit Hakneses Tachos Nerashat Tavshel Goseis Kedei Shiyomus Mehera. He gounds him in Maher Yitzias Nafsho. He also can't put the keys to Shul underneath the Goseis' head, because that also caused him to die rapidly, as opposed to giving the soul the keys so that they can, the keys that have to unlock the door that has been in his way and removing him out case. So we have two wild things beyond the Sefer Chassidim. First is this synagogue key thing, which by any normal thing you would guess that would be Meister Monea, because obviously giving them the keys is because there's a locked door in their way, and you're giving them the way, you're giving them the way to unlock the barrier. And secondly, he makes it mutter to remove the salt. Okay? And he says, Lefiza imyesh tsham davar shagorim anafsho shalotetse, mutter lahasir osa gorim v'ein dekach kum, shari ein meniach etzbo al haner, v'einu osim maase. Right now he relates to the thing, right? So we have a whole bunch of criteria, right, which basically says that there are cases which are considered the equivalent of putting your finger on the candle and doing something, and those are defined, those are moving the ghosts or putting the keys to shul underneath their head. And right, and that's considered osimasa. What's considered not osimasa is having a ghost who's being kept alive by salt on their tongue and removing the salt. Sorry? Now, how does one know? Why does salt keep people alive unnaturally, whereas keys cause people to die naturally?
Keys are also
right. Okay, sorry, the other way around. Why is salt keeping people alive unnaturally, whereas keys keep people alive naturally? Whereas the absence of keys keeps people alive naturally.
Because it's an absence.
Because
the absence of salt allows people to die naturally, and the absence of keys allows them to just be alive naturally.
Uh-huh. And So we venture any predictive things like respirators. And respirators matter. The question always are the respirators and scuba divers. Right? There's respirators on dying patients and there's respirators scuba divers. Right, what if the doses make a difference?
Says one need the fog, you know, one is tempted to find a process, and these are the sources presented here as somebody who is inevitably going to die for a certain defined period of time.
What is the defined matter? What is the defined period of time matter? Like, obviously, they're not going to die because the whole point is we're talking about somebody who hasn't died in the prescribed time.
Well, the question is, what do you mean prescribed time? Somebody who there's no way that you're going to affect recovery, you know, so rather you can prolong his life.
Yeah.
So he's going to continue going downhill from here.
Yeah.
Here is already a pretty bad state to be in.
Yeah.
So he's going to stay on his deathbed for an extra, you know, hour, for an extra, you know, 10 hours or whatever it is. That's a gosius, where somebody has a chance of recovering from his deathbed and getting into a regular sick bed or getting back to ordinary health. That somebody who's not a gosius, these halachos cannot apply to him.
Where did this kiddush come from, a gosius? And within that gosius, again, you're telling me the same gosius, same condition, some means are mutter and some means are usher. Why is it usher to put the keys under the... Right, the guy's gosius anyway.
He has to be left to his natural self. You're not supposed to prevent him from dying, and you're not supposed to cause him to die.
So there's no chi of asala.
No, because it's always possible. He's a gosius. That can't be true. Let's go through the mitzvah. He's a total survive, I think.
Where does real gosius in the mitzvah come on?
Well, let's test this case. Suppose the ghost says... Suppose there's a poisonous snake creeping towards the ghost says. Right? Do I have a mitzvah to shoot them?
Yes. No, you have a mitzvah to kill the snake.
I came up with a case this summer, right, where you have two people walk towards the ghost says, okay? One of them is with a revolver. Another person with a revolver, with two people with revolvers. Okay, one of them is going to shoot the ghost face. One of them is going to pull the plug on the respirator. The person with the second person shoots the first person as a roge, and then pulls the plug. Right? Isn't that what the situation we're in?
May not be rude,
though. Yeah,
it's a separate
question.
Why isn't he
rude? Because the person's going to die anyway.
He's committing shrichus
d'ayin. But that's why it's so difficult to define. This person's not—it's not a person. I mean, it's a person, but it's a person who's going to die. It's a different category than person.
Aha. So we're going to take shrichus d'ayin, right? Very. I mean, Gemara, the Mishnah tells us that you're chayav for shrichus d'ayin.
It's forbidden. That's what we determined at the beginning. The Gemara doesn't phrase it as.
But in the beginning, it does. Right, it's the whole issue of Asara, right, Asara Shehargu, yeah.
What does it say?
That, you're right, that you're killing, even if the person was a ghost, you're the one who finished them off.
Asara Shehargu is a different story. Also, I think Ethan Zohar may be the better.
Okay.
What happens if somebody's with Seach the ghost, he says, Ethan Shehar Shehazima. Because Asara Shehargu is all the one with Surah from the Mike of Tzichot.
Uh-huh. Okay. I want to do one more thing. All right, that we can close together. I want to look at the way the Rama actually cites this. Okay, so now, unfortunately, we can't look at the way the Rama and the Darkei Moshe without time. There are differences in the Darkei Moshe also. Okay, so Rama says, V'chein asra ligram l'meis shiyamas mehera, yigel mishu goseis zman aruch. Okay, new thing in the Rama that doesn't appear before, that it has to be goseis zman aruch, which is a problem if a goseis is defined as somebody who is going to die. Rabbi Lezik says Ma'aruch is relatively longer than the usual Gosis does, but not long enough to remove them from the category of inevitable death of a Gosis.
The thing we read is that in order for somebody to become a Gosis, then it has to be demonstrably clear that they can't affect the recovery. And the way to do that is if they have not recovered from their status for a significant amount of time, then you can assume that, you know, they're...
Okay, it's an ongoing condition. Fine, I'm willing to...
It's Ma'aruch or Ma'freya.
Okay, let's hold off for a minute, because I want to title. The Lo Yuchal Lipa, right? After Lishamei Dakar, the Ketzet Mitachta, Seipatkin, like, I think it was the shot, in the end that the Shulchan Gibarim himself never changed his mind about this. He thought that he could find a way to that the Sefer Chassidim supported his position that you can't remove the pillow. Mikach Shomer Sheish Notzos Mikzat Ofas Shagarmim Zeh. The Chen Lizi Zenimim Kama. You can't move him from place. The Chen Asher Losim Maftechos. Now here I just had for fun. It seems to me that Beis HaKnesses is probably a typo, and it should be Beis HaKvaros. Makes a lot more sense to place the keys to the cemetery under the head of somebody who helped them die than the keys to shul. And yeah, obviously you see how that could happen here.
Why does it make more sense?
Because how do the keys to shul help you die? Right, so in order to die you have to get into shul?
Unless they're in the heart. Okay,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise. I have not found it. It wouldn't surprise me if there were a cross cultural manic of placing the keys in cemeteries under the heads of dying people to help them die. But I have no basis at all other than just pointing out that the Ramah has the abbreviation differently, and he has it in Darkei Moshe also. Yes, but there only seems to be one edition of Shulchan Gibarim. So, but on the other hand, there are other changes in the quotes. So you have to figure out. This is, you know, I wonder. Again, that it's perfectly mutter to remove it, not just to fail to place it. Okay, so what we have in the end is, we're going to trace it historically. The Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim never says you can, right? You can remove anything which is actually physically keeping somebody alive. Sefer Chassidim says you can remove the salt. You can. Sefer Chassidim Zafka says you can remove the wood chopper, and you don't have to put the salt.
You're not allowed to.
Right? Allowed to put the salt. Right? Never says you can remove the salt. And the Chora, if he thought you could remove the salt, he would tell you that. The Shulchan Gibarim, right? So all sorts of options are open in Sefer Chassidim. In terms of the Sefer Chassidim is open to a possibility that you can touch, that you can't touch the Gosseis, right? Which is the way some Achronim read it, and that's why it's a matter whether you think there really is such a position or not. Right? I think it's clear that if you read the Sefer Chassidim, it's clear that there never really was Nisr Negiyah, that Hamezizo always meant Hamezizo Mimikomo, and the Nisr Negiyah is a misunderstanding placed upon that. Okay, so I don't think that's shot in the Sefer Chassidim either. I think you should realize that many Achronim read the Sefer Chassidim as making a distinction between touch and not touch. Shulchan Gibarim eliminates that, puts in the key case, probably says that it's usher to remove the pillow from underneath as well, but that could be the two ways of reading usher to remove the pillow. One possibility is he agrees that the feathers were keeping the person alive, and he thinks that it's usher to do it, or he thinks that, what are you doing? You think the feathers are keeping him alive, and that's why the people die? No, empirically, the reason the ghost dies is when you pull a pillow off from underneath him, it's not the feathers are keeping him alive, it's you went bang. Okay. So Shulchan Gibarim has fewer options. The Ramah introduces this whole distinction of Meisir Monea, which many people interpret as a way of saying that the distinction is between a Masa and not a Masa, and that's the whole issue. And you import Meisir Monea from the category of Shabbos, but that can't be. If the issue is just Meisir Monea, technically, then you should be able to do it to a perfectly living person also. Right? So it has to be some combination of Meisir Monea with the patient. Now the question is, what is the patient? So the Tzitz Eliezer comes up with this wild kiddush that it's not relevant to the category of ghostes. Right? Tzitz Eliezer deals with because a ghostes, by any halachic definition, means somebody's going to die within a specified amount of time. But the problem with brain dead patients is they're not going to die in a specified amount of time. They could die 50 years later. Right? So Tzitz Eliezer and before him, Chaim David Halevi, come up with this radical kiddush that there are patients who are not halachically ghostic, whom nonetheless it is mutter to actively remove, right, to actively remove this externally applied life. Now, the question is, first of all, is that a reasonable reading of Sefer Chassidim? Very hard to argue that, to me, that if you move the ghostic from one place to another, right, you are removing an internal life, whereas if you remove the wood chopper, you're removing an external life. That's a very, very hard. That's a very, very hard read of Sefer Chassidim to me. Right, to say that he has a distinction between internal and external life. Sefer Chassidim Lechora has a distinction between types of causes, not between types of life. He's talking about the same ghosts. Right, I don't think he thinks that the wood chopper is providing external life, whereas the room is providing internal life. That's right. How is the wood chopper providing external life? The wood chopper is keeping him alive. It's the same life.
The wood chopper is preventing a natural death.
Which is not the same thing, right? You can distinguish between natural death and unnatural death. You can't distinguish between natural life and unnatural life. Okay, the Sefer Chassidim, right? Sefer Chassidim might be distinguishing that way, but I think he's defining natural, unnatural, not as the type of death, but as the means of causation. That becomes much harder. The way the Shulta Gibarim quotes him for his own agenda, right, that position becomes very difficult to sustain. Because he has to, right? Because he has to include all the other cases, and at the end of Sefer Chassidim, you have to make some kind of more complicated distinction, probably between natural and unnatural death, even though it's hard to imagine his cases of any predictive value. When the Ramah quotes it, he generalizes it in a way which is which emphasizes the language of the Shulchan Gevurim in terms of Ose Ma'ase, which is probably more in touch with the Sefer Chassidim. But not so much found in the Shulchan Gevurim. And then Leander comes up with this wholly radical distinction between internal and external life that to me has no ground in the prior text. On the other hand, the history of interpretation of Sefer Chassidim, most Achronim have assumed that Negiah is Asur and spent their time talking about which cases are Negiah and which cases aren't Negiah. They're not compelling either. There is a new case. The new case we have is patients who are not ghosts, but also have no quality of life. So what you have, I think, in the Sitz Eliezer and the Sefer Harav is the equivalent of the Sefer Chassidim coming up with a wholly new category. Sefer Chassidim created this notion that it's not always us to kill a ghost, but they're Mesoros or not, but we have no prior reference. And the Sitz Eliezer and the Sefer Harav has created a whole new category of patients, for which they are then trying to come up with a category of actions. Now I'm pointing out that halakhically, if the move about the patient works, then it shouldn't matter what kind of action. If the move about the action works, it shouldn't matter what kind of patient. But intuitively, and this is where Fry is pointing, everyone seems to feel that it's good policy to allow some patients to die, it's bad policy to allow you to shoot anybody. And so everybody comes up with some kind of combination of patience and means. The challenge is that this is not an area. I don't think anybody has yet come up with an adequate formulation of the precedent, let alone an adequate formulation of the current case. And the Sitz Eliezer's case that somebody would externalize on what basis?
Sitz Eliezer between this case and that
of ghost
is, or is there a possibility that he believes that
the patient
is actually considered a ghost?
No, he doesn't. It's very clear the patient is not a ghost. But he thinks that a ghost is just an example of somebody with an external life. Or else he thinks a ghost is different. Yeah, I mean, it may think ghost is a different rationale. So I'm trying to write this article now on how halacha should handle end of life cases. First question is, is there an Igiya? I want to claim there really should be no such Isra. And if I do, how do I frame it? The Shulchan Aruch doesn't have one. Shina Lo Rishon do. I think most compelling to me probably is to claim that people who understand Igiya like Rav Moshe as touching as opposed to as touching with the force of moving are misunderstanding it in the context of all Rishonim. You'll see that laziz always means to move from place, and an agia bo mezizo should be read as not somebody who touches him and moves him or moves him, but read as somebody who touches him and moves him. That suffices, I think. We go back to the Rif, the Ram, and the Rush. I think that suffices for the. Sorry, it suffices for the Braita. Right? If we go back to the Rif, the Ram, and the Rush, unfortunately, each of them have an Ogea Bohar Reza Shochet Domim alone. But if they're both based on one of these texts, so that the Nogei Bo is really means the same thing as the Brisa Nogei Bo and Mizizo.
Isn't there a formal way to say tomorrow, and then the Brisa Ivor Rasida doesn't mention it, so there's a skew in Mishulim, and if the answer is that the Mishulim and Shabbos are authoritative, and Mishulim and Moi Kachna could be reinterpreted in light of Mishulim and Shabbos, and hence everybody really agrees that there's no Israel Nogia on the matter.
Right, and as we didn't reinterpret an Ogeabo as an Ogeabo and Mezizo in light of the list in Shabbos, right? Mezizo Boever. That's probably the way to do it halachically. I don't know if that's how it happened, but that's probably the way to do it halachically, and that's to figure out, you know, whether I'm comfortable making an argument like that with integrity, if saying that's what must have happened, or stating that by the canons of halacha, it can't be the Shulchan Aruch ignoring the Rishonim. There's no reason to posit, you know, an Isra Negiyah and the Shulchan Aruch. The Isra Negiyah as such make no sense to any of them because it's so redundant. The Isra Negiyah makes all the other things redundant, right? You can't poke it in the kavav, but it's not right. But it's right, but it's mutter to touch him. Yeah, but it's mutter to touch him. I don't need to know that it ain't poking in the kavav. And therefore, end of sin, there's no Isra Negiyah. And then dealing with contemporary patients, the question is, am I comfortable accepting the Tzitzil Yezer's distinction, which, even though I have no way myself of, with any degree of comfort, saying that I know which patients have quote unquote external life, which patients have internal life. I see no predictive value to that whatsoever. And the truth is, Tzitzil Yezer's rhetoric in his case is unrelated to the external internal life. It's related to his deep moral sense that we are distinguishing the Kavod Adam by allowing a person to live in that condition. Or kind of a lady has the much more startling language where he says that this is someone whom God wants dead. And you are going against Ratzon HaBore by keeping this person alive.
I prefer to just find the goosies in the answer.
Okay.
The metaphor is the name.
Yeah. So the metaphor of the name, I think the metaphor of the name is talking about closing the eyes. And I think, again, my bet is that there was a minhag that was a minhag where you tried to close the eyes at the moment of death. Right? And the Rambam interpreted the Isser not necessarily as being against that. The Rambam thought the Isser was based on the notion that you might do it a moment too early. But the point is, you really want to get the candle at the moment that it's going out. But I said there may very well be two different understandings. One is that you tried to close it the moment after death, and that was designed to prevent the soul from going back in, and one is you tried to close it at death because that was, right, because it was a mitzvah to ease the transition in some way. The Rambam would have taught the second one was totally aser by definition, right? I don't know that everybody else would have necessarily thought that. You know, this is one of the areas where, you know, we need a confident folklorist.
We
do close the eyes, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do for a maze.
Yeah.
Right? It's just you can't do it until you're sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? Elisha, Nacha, Minasela. We always do that.
I don't have any idea of doing it very quickly.
Right? The three Naskaminas are A, do we want to pastorally tell people not to worry about the Eastern Negev to go to space? B, are we comfortable withdrawing care from patients who are not technically ghosts? And if yes, do we have the criteria for deciding which patients, which is anything other than, I think this guy's life is worth living, I think this guy's life is not worth living. I think God wants this person dead, I think God doesn't want this person dead. I don't have that kind of nevuah. Friend?
Do you want to give a third question, or do I try to answer the second?
Okay, what's your answer to the second? What's the criteria?
I would argue that go see for somebody who is in between heaven and earth.
Yeah, so?
Yes, it's a person who is not going to recover. I mean, so a person who's brain dead, for instance, is his situation going to get any better?
A person who has terminal cancer, they might have 7 years to live.
But there the Gemara Shabbos, so that it differentiates between a Rechus Yamin and the other type of a Rechus Yamin.
A person is not brain dead. A person with severe brain damage could live a normal lifespan. So in what sense are they between heaven and earth? Why are they
good? Their soul is gone.
How do you know that? Are they, you know, you feel part of their soul is gone.
Can they speak?
Can I speak?
Yeah.
No, probably not.
They have no ruach malala.
And don't you do
it. Well, I gotta say, that's you know, some of that aphasia, right, is also between heaven and earth. Right, where the speech center of their brain is destroyed. That's very hard. Well, you know, they have to deal with the cases of people who never get to speak.
And also, why would you say some of them recovered before you were trying to think that someone was going to die? The difference being that there's only time there to death.
That's when it's weird to give them time and pain.
Very hard. I think it's very hard. And the third thing, if you want to really push it, is to say, well, okay, if we really buy it, I think if you really buy the Sicilian argument, then you have to end up saying it's okay to shoot people. And that I think is a good thing, because that lets us solve the organization problem. Are you willing to accept that argument? I think the Sicilian argument, if God wants this person dead, then why can't I kill them? If you want to force me, I'll say, oh, because it's a shrichus damim, so I'll find a way. So we'll set up a Maaser Manea situation the way they do it in Israeli factories for Shabbos. Right? You know, we'll set up, you know, this is what Kevorkian did. Right? Kevorkian set up Maaser Manea machines to help people commit suicide. So that's what we'll do, right? We'll rig them up so there's a lethal injection in the arm and there's an electric eye. And right, and then Rasa de Milsa will set up a random number generator where, you know, we throw tennis balls across the room, and one of every 10 times we throw the tennis ball across the room, right, it's going to die. We have 10 different people throwing the tennis balls, so nobody has a sig ratio, and that way we can take out the person's organ. Yeah, I leave it. You know, I could come up with formulations. My belief is that my formulations would be Svara Sakaris. And so look, we have a whole anything, you know, called abortion, which we're moda, we have nothing but Svara Sakaris to go on. According to the Chavos Yair, you know, figuring out where the boundaries are as to when you consider a fetus to be shlichus damim and when not. I would rather not say that. On the other hand, I think an honest appraisal is that we have no clear masoret that we can build these cases on, and we really desperately need it, because if we don't come up with this, then we are largely irrelevant to much of the experience in hospitals. All right, that's the end of. Thank you. Thank you. All of you who challenged me.